everyone, and welcome to the THN Prospect Podcast. And I have to admit, Ken Campbell here. I have to admit, this is my first Prospect Podcast.
Welcome.
First for a while. Yeah, first long time listener, first time
Since the world
host. First time host.
Yes.
But yeah, so we're going to go ahead with this. It's been very, very, it's been very successful to this point, so I'm hoping that I can keep up that string. And I want to introduce to you the prospect guru, the future guru of Hockey News, which is Ryan Kennedy, who I want to talk to you about a bit about this before we get going on a lot of the other stuff. You were at the OHL Cup this week.
Yes.
This past week. You watched the Toronto Junior Canadians win it, but you were also there in the earlier rounds, and you watched Quinton Byfield, who is the number one prospect for the OHL, and I'm happy to report that I am hearing that it is a done deal, and he is going to go to my hometown Sudbury Wolves.
Wow.
Nice. So for the first time in forever, Sudbury has the first pick and actually is going to get the best player.
That's amazing.
Which is awesome
for
me, because Sudbury deserves that. Sudbury, to me, Sudbury is the Toronto Maple Leafs of the OHL.
Mm.
Like, there's just unconditional love for that team, and people stand, you know, through thick and thin, but they're starting to get a little bit tired of it.
Yes.
And so I think that if Quinton Byfield can be to the Sudbury Wolves, and I'm not saying he's Austin Matthews, what Austin Matthews is to the Toronto Maple Leafs, then maybe they can turn this thing around. They've got Corey Stillman as a coach. You know, they finished last overall this year, but as we've pointed out in our podcast, sometimes it takes a while for a coach to make his own imprint on a team. Anyways, what are your thoughts on Quinton Byfield?
Well, what impressed me the most about seeing Quinton Byfield in person was I knew he had the size, but the speed was incredible. Like, when he goes in on the rush, he could go through guys if he wanted to, but he goes around them.
Yeah.
You know, and like, to see that speed married with all the talent he has and the size, it's such a complete package right now. He's really good at using his defensemen when he's cycling the puck, and obviously he had a ton of attention on him specifically at the OHL Cup because everybody knows who he is. But I just see so many transferable skills there. And, you know, he has an edge. If a player steps up to him, most likely that player is going to get run over because Byfield is so solid, and he's training with Gary Roberts. So you know that this summer he's going to get even more beastly. And I think that, yeah, if he's going to Sudbury, that is huge for the Wolves. Like, maybe they can finally break that cycle where, you know, they sometimes get close to the playoffs but don't, and then they're the worst team again.
Yeah.
Like, they need to win some rounds. And I think with Byfield, they can win some rounds.
And the last two number one picks they had were John McFarland and David Levin.
Yeah.
Neither of whom, you know, with all due respect, has done much, did much for that organization.
Right.
In a previous life, when I was covering the team and that, they had John Uniacke as the top number one pick, Dave Moylan. Like, I mean,
I don't know who those people are.
I mean, Quinton Byfield has got to break that mold.
Yeah.
But you know what I like, Ryan, is the fact that, you know, I'm a big believer in the fact that, you know, a kid as talented as Quinton Byfield should be able to exercise whatever option he wants.
Right.
If he doesn't want to go and play for the Sudbury Wolves, he shouldn't be made to go and play for the Sudbury Wolves. Mm. He should be able to dictate his own destiny. But I think on the flip side, I also think it says something about him as a player and in terms of his character that he's saying, no, this team wants me, and I'm going to go there, and I want to be part of the solution. So I'm big-time jacked about this because I'm from Sudbury.
Right.
But I also really like what I'm seeing in terms of what kind of character this kid is showing.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, because Sudbury is picking first overall, they're also going to have a very high pick in the CHL import draft.
Right.
So now with Byfield, they can go to players over in Europe and be like, hey, we got a kid that you can play with. And this will be fun. And also, you know, they've got some players that are coming up that look like they could be decent. They're underagers right now. That it's amazing how quickly you can turn things around in junior.
Yeah.
Just look at the Barry Colts.
They
were awful last year. But
yep.
You get Andrei Svechnikov. You make a big trade for Dmitry Sokolov. You get Ryan Suzuki first
from
overall.
Sudbury.
There you go.
Dmitry Sokolov. And
that's
all,
right.
All he does is score like one or two goals a game.
Exactly. It's funny. You know, on the podcast, we were talking to Jason Ford, the Colts GM, and he said the reason they wanted Sokolov is they played Sudbury more than anybody else, and he terrified them every time they played
him.
So, there you go.
Yeah, good stuff, good stuff. Well, speaking of the OHL, Ryan, the results of the OHL coaches poll have come out. And, I mean, these guys rate players in every possible category. Hardest worker, smartest player, best playmaker, best skater, best shot, you know, greatest guy in the room, best, you know, best boyfriend, most outstanding water bottle filler. Like, they got it all.
It's all here.
Yeah, and a couple of guys obviously jumped out. I wish, you know, when they did this, and we're going to talk about the OHLs or the WHL's All-Star team, mm-hmm. I wish they wouldn't go by conference or division. I wish they'd just pick the top guys in the league, but, you know, they decided to do this. So a couple of guys really stood out for you. I mean, obviously, some guys that people are really familiar with, guys like, you know, Robert Thomas, St. Louis prospect playing for Hamilton, Morgan Frost, who's a Philly prospect playing in St. Louis, Jordan Kyrou was, you know, on a couple of these things. What was your takeaway from this, Ryan?
Well, yeah, we'll start off with the notables. So Morgan Frost, as you're saying, with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, he won smartest player, best playmaker, and he ranked second for best stick handler in the West. And given the season he's had, the offensive numbers he's put up, no surprise there.
Right.
Robert Thomas started the year with London, now with Hamilton. So in the East, smartest player. He was second as best playmaker and third as best stick handler. Interestingly enough,
and didn't really have a lot of time to establish himself as those things, right? Because he was traded when? In January?
Yeah, exactly.
So he's only had like a month and a half or 2 months to establish himself as one of these guys in the East, right?
Yeah, and interestingly enough, you know, our Future Watch issue is on newsstands now, and when it came to number one votes, Robert Thomas actually got one. So he was competing with guys like Casey Mittelstadt, Elias Pettersson, Cale Makar. Thomas actually got a number one vote, so, you know, nice for him.
Interesting.
On the defensive side, kind of interesting, Nick Hague, who actually set a Mississauga record this year with 76 points from the blue line, he did pretty well as well. Hardest shot in the East and best offensive defenseman in the East. He's a Vegas Golden Knights pick. It'll be interesting to see his development because I think he'll turn pro next year. And Vegas, you know, obviously they've got plenty of space in the pro ranks because they only got one draft under their belt.
Yeah.
So I think he'll be fun to watch. Last kid I'll mention, Boris Kachuk, the Tampa Bay Lightning prospect, another Sault Ste. Marie Greyhound. For the second straight year, he was named best penalty killer in the West. And he also was named most dangerous in the goal area. Mm. So, once again, Tampa doing some great work in the draft.
Yeah, it's amazing. I wanted to touch on a couple of guys, Ryan, that you may or may not know about. I'm sure you do. And they're guys that got passed over last year. One of them is Evan Bouchard of the London Knights.
No, he's actually first. He's a 99. He's a late birthday.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so
okay,
he's up
well,
this
thanks
year.
Thanks for correcting me on that.
No
so he's
problem.
Up this year. So that's why he hasn't been drafted.
Exactly.
But I mean, here's a guy who finished hardest shot in the Western Conference, number one. And I believe he was like hardest worker or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Anyways, a guy that that probably, you know, we'll end up seeing in the draft this year.
Definitely. And there's been a lot of movement upwards for Evan Bouchard.
Sorry, best offensive defenseman. That was the
there
other
you go.
One. Yeah, that was the other one. Yeah,
so Hague got it in the East, Bouchard got it in the West.
Yeah.
And, yeah, led the London Knights in scoring from the blue line. Pretty impressive there. And he's interesting because he doesn't have the dynamic skating of some of the high-end defensemen, but he has size, and he's one of the best passers around right now. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him go in that 6-10 range because you got Rasmus Dahlin. We know he's going to be first. And then the second defenseman off the board, I mean, it could be Bouchard. It might be Adam Boqvist, might be Quinn Hughes. Those are your dynamic, mobile guys. But Bouchard, I mean, he's got so many different tools that I think we'll see him very quickly.
Interesting. Most underrated player, it's all guys who weren't drafted.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, right?
Yeah, totally.
Justin Brazo in the East and Aiden Dudas in the West. So,
And Dudas is actually up for the draft this year as well.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there's a few guys that are up for the draft. Another guy Dudas is up this year. You're right. Absolutely right. So, moving over in terms of junior hockey, moving over to the WHL, we've got our all-star teams, first and second team all-stars for the Eastern and Western Conference. Again, they've got a first team in the East, a first team in the West, a second team in the East, a second team in the West. So there's a fair number of players here. Probably a few things I would think stood out at you. I know that people in Vancouver will not be pleased to know that Cole Lind was not picked as an all-star in either the first or second team in the West. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that was, Ryan? And what do you make of the guys that are on this list?
Yeah, it's tricky because Cole Lind put up 95 points in 58 games, which is certainly pretty good. But unfortunately, I mean, he's in a conference where he's competing with Cody Glass, the Vegas Golden Knights pick, who had 102 points.
Yeah.
You know, and Jaden Halbgewachs, who played for Moose Jaw, for example, another all-star, where I think he had like 130 or something. Like, there was just a huge points glut in the WHL this season.
Right.
You know, Alexi Heponiemi and Swift Current, the Florida Panthers pick. Jared Anderson Dolan from Spokane, the LA Kings prospect, he didn't put up, a ton of points, but he's also an amazing two-way player, so he got a nod there, and I think a deserved one. So I would say, for Cole Lind, this is, yet another sort of motivator for him. I think he had an amazing season, and I think that he's a player that Canada is really going to key in on for the World Juniors next season, so he can use that as fuel. I think the Canucks have a lot of good picks, so it's all good there. Something else that I thought was pretty good was two 2018 draft picks made the All-Star teams. Ty Smith, who talking to scouts, they say he's far and away the best prospect out of the Dub this year. He's another one of those mobile defensemen playing for Spokane. And David Tendek, this is interesting, goaltender for the Vancouver Giants.
Right.
He's got some decent size. He's about 6'2", 6'3". And goaltending this year has just been all over the place for the 2018 draft. It's the hardest year for me to predict so far in my tenure. But the fact that he's getting an all-star nod, I think that's a nice little feather in his cap, and we'll see what happens in the playoffs.
Interesting. Well, on the western side of the first all-star team, I'm sure Philadelphia Flyer fans will be thrilled to hear that Carter Hart is the first-team goalie. Completely deserved.
Totally.
I mean, he's been dominant this year. And it was interesting, before the World Juniors, I did a piece on Carter Hart, and I talked to Ron Hextall, and Carter Hart had a really not great training camp, largely because he found out when he got back he had mononucleosis, which was kind of, he said there were games where he was like standing and like resting on the on the crossbar because he couldn't do anything, but anyways, Ron Hextall told him, he said, you got to go back this year, you got to dominate in the WHL, and you've got to be the World Junior goalie. And both of those boxes have been checked off, as far as I'm concerned. Every time I look, Carter Hart's done something with a shutout, or made him, done some great plays, or set a win record or whatever. I mean, you don't want to jinx it, but maybe the Philadelphia Flyers have found a goaltender.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, at one point in the season, I think they might as well have named the Goalie of the Month award like the Carter Hart Award.
Right.
It was getting to that.
The Hart Trophy.
Yeah, is that thing? But I think, you look at the Flyers, and they actually have a nice pipeline of goalies right now. They're going to have some very good competition. And the key, and it's funny, I actually spoke to Hextall about this later in the year, is making sure that guys are graduating from junior or NCAA or Europe at different times, because you need to have creases for these kids.
Right.
And so I think Carter Hart, next year is a big year where, we'll see him in Lehigh Valley.
Number one in
Lehigh
Valley, I would think.
You got to get him those starts.
Yeah,
and I think that as long as you can align those things, he's got everything you need. He's not a skyscraper. He's probably like 6'1", maybe 6'1 and a half. But, I mean, everything else is so fundamentally sound with him. And I love that he had that baptism by fire at the World Juniors, where he got that second chance to snag a gold after the heartbreak in Montreal.
Yeah.
And he did it. He came through in the game that really mattered.
Right, right. To me, I think the Flyers really have to, there's going to be a temptation, I think.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be a temptation to bring this kid and throw him into the NHL. And we've seen it do, you know, in some ways it's been good. Like Tom Barrasso came right out of high school and played in the NHL. You know, but, you know, I mean, I think the fact of the matter is that they're going to need, this kid's going to need some time. Goalies always do.
Mm-hmm.
And sorry, Philly, but you're going to have to live with Peter Mrazek playing 10 straight games and then 15 lousy ones. And
right.
I mean, that's just the way he is. And he's that's what he is.
Yeah.
He's a wildly inconsistent goalie who, when he's really good, is great. And when he's not good, he's really not good.
Yeah.
And so I think you'll have to live with that for another year or two. But I think, you know, I think if they develop him the way we think they should, this guy could come in and be, you know, I mean, you don't want to jinx anything, but this guy could be an elite goalie in the NHL. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I agree.
Since we are an equal opportunity podcaster here at the Hockey News, we will touch on the Frozen Four, U.S. college hockey, which is going on right now. In fact, as you're listening to this podcast, there actually are games.
There are games. Right,
there are games in progress.
Exactly.
But when we recorded this podcast,
mm-hmm.
There were not.
That's
so
right.
We're going to. We're not. Ryan's going to do a bit of a bracket here for March Madness. We're down to the Sweet 16 this weekend.
That's right.
With four groupings. Playing and then out of that will be the final four that go to Minneapolis St. Paul next week, right?
Indeed.
Okay.
Well, it'll be next week, but April 7th.
April 7th? That's 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess they don't want to do it on Easter weekend.
No.
Not a good time. Anyways, okay, so in the first group, we have St. Cloud taking on Air Force in the first game and MSU Mankato, which I believe is David Backus's alma mater.
You are correct.
Playing Minnesota Duluth in the second game. St. Cloud's favorite in this one. They're number one out of the four. Where do you see this going?
Well, I do like the Huskies in this bracket, and I think this is a very competitive bracket because, Minnesota State, Minnesota Duluth, even Air Force, I find that, you know, even though they were an automatic bid from the Atlantic Hockey Conference, the Falcons tend to be a tough out. But when I look at this Huskies team, you know, I see a squad that brings back a lot of players from last year when the team underwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, for example, Jimmy Schultz, who's up for the Hobie Baker Award, really good, solid defenseman, put up a lot of points for them. He could have signed as a college free agent last year, but he came back to St. Cloud because he wanted to play in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to do some damage. So you get him, you got Ryan Poehling, the Montreal Canadiens first rounder up front, Mikey Isamont, the Kings pick, you know, Will Borgen, the Buffalo Sabres prospect on defense. I think they've got a really good complement of players, and I think they're very motivated. So I think St. Cloud comes out of that regional.
All right, so in the other regional, we have number one Cornell against number four Boston U, and number two Michigan against number three Northeastern. I think you're hankering for a bit of an upset here, aren't you?
Little bit, yeah. I like Northeastern. I feel like this is their year to do damage. And I'll also say I think this is the most entertaining regional. Because BU, Cornell, Northeastern, there's a lot to like about all those teams. And Michigan as well, with Quinn Hughes up for the 2018 draft. So I think it's going to be fun. That first game, Michigan and Northeastern, I think that could be like last year's North Dakota Boston University game that went to extra time, had so many good NHL prospects. But when I look at these Huskies, you got Adam Gaudette from the Vancouver Canucks system, Dylan Secura from the Blackhawks system, Nolan Stevens from the Blues system. They've been an incredible top line. Caden Primo in net, the Montreal Canadiens pick. For me, he has been the most surprising freshman of the entire NCAA season. He's been incredible for Northeastern. For a goalie to come in as a freshman and have that impact is just incredible. And then Jeremy Davies on the back end, the New Jersey Devils pick. I think they've got a lot of great dynamic elements on this team. And with all due respect to everybody else in that bracket, I just feel like Northeastern, again, like St. Cloud, I feel this is a motivating year for them. I'm sure they know that guys like Sakura and Gaudette are probably gone in the summer.
Yeah,
so they want to make one last run for it. And they won the Bean Pot for the first time in 30 years this season. So they've got a lot of good vibes around them.
Okay, well, we'll be looking for that. If it doesn't happen, we'll laugh at you.
Fair enough.
And, okay, so in the third regional, we've got Ohio State going up against Princeton. which in football, I think they would demolish.
It would not be a good idea.
And
yeah.
Then we've got number two, Denver, who's the defending national champion, of course, playing Penn State. And do you like the Pioneers to sort of show their colors and come out of this one?
I do. I think the Pioneers of Denver have a lot of good elements coming back from last year's championship team. Henrik Borgstrom, the Florida Panthers first rounder, leads the way. He's another Hobey Baker candidate. And you still got Dylan Gambrell, the San Jose pick. Ian Mitchell has been an impact freshman on the back end. He's a Chicago Blackhawks pick. And this is a very interesting bracket. That Ohio State-Princeton game is fascinating to me because Ohio State comes in, you know, as the top seed. And, you know, they've got a good team. But, you know, Princeton, they got a little bit of magic right now. And Max Verano, he's an interesting college free agent, very quick guy. He'll get a lot of attention this summer if he decides to leave school. So I think there's a possible upset there, but overall, I think Denver has just the profile and the portfolio to be the eventual winner of that regional.
Okay, and then the last regional, we've got number one Notre Dame against number four Michigan Tech, and number two Providence against number three Clarkson. If I'm not mistaken, Ryan, Notre Dame has been the number one ranked team in the country for most of the season, correct?
Yeah, for most of the season, and when they haven't, they've been like number two.
Right.
Just a lot of good elements on that team. They've been getting fantastic goaltending from Cale Morris. Jake Evans, the Montreal pick, has been fantastic for them up front. And I feel like this is sort of a... Yeah, as they say, a chalk regional. Like I see North Dakota, or I see Notre Dame coming out of there as the one seed. I think that Providence Clarkson game will be pretty good because Clarkson has some nice players that could be free agents if they decide to come out this summer. Mm. Sheldon Rempel and Nico Sturm. They might come back for the Golden Knights. It'll be interesting to see you there. And Michigan Tech, you know, solid coming out of the WCHA. But I just think Notre Dame has too many guys that can do damage, and they can really lock it down thanks to their goaltending. So I like Notre Dame.
Excellent. Well, that all gets underway, as we said today, and goes through the weekend leading up to the Frozen Four in St. Paul, Minnesota, in a couple of weeks. So now we're going to change gears a little bit here. Earlier this week, Ryan did an interview with Pittsburgh Penguins prospect Daniel Sprong, who we're continuing to wait to see him crack the NHL lineup and to get some serious minutes and to make a contribution. And I mean, it seems to me that when he does get those opportunities, he shows them a lot. So, should be interesting to see when, you know, in that deep team, he'll be able to make his mark. But here's Ryan Kennedy, speaking with Pittsburgh Penguins prospect Daniel Sprong.
I'm here with Daniel Sprong of the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins of the AHL. And Daniel, first off, this is your first full season with the Penguins. How have you felt about the pro lifestyle and just the overall play in the AHL?
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot different than juniors, of course, playing against older, better guys. And I'm excited. I think as a team, we're having a good year and excited for playoffs and a lot of guys going up and down. You know, it's first time witnessing that or being through that. So it's an exciting time and learning a lot.
Now, you've already spent some time with Pittsburgh in the NHL. I'm curious, how close are the systems and the structure between Pittsburgh and Wilkes-Barre Scranton?
Oh, they're almost similar, maybe little things different, but they're very similar. So I think a lot of guys go up. It's an easy transition system-wise, and I think all the guys that went up, including myself, I think we all done a good job.
And how would you characterize the style of play for both organizations?
Well, both teams have a lot of speed. We're a hard team to play against. We're a really good 5-on-5 down here. Our PP's been struggling, but we're creating a lot of momentum lately, and I think we're on the right track. And up there, they have an unbelievable power play with those five guys. So we get to learn from them a lot by watching their games or videos. So I think both teams are really good.
Now, it's kind of funny, you being in Wilkes-Barre, because it's not even the first time you've played in the city. You played some minor hockey there with Ivan Provorov of the Flyers, and I'm just kind of curious, kind of an interesting team, given that neither of you are actually from the United States.
Yeah, for sure. That team years ago was pretty strong, and got to play Ivan this year in Philly, so it was pretty cool to see him and play against them, especially playing with them when we were younger. So, yeah, it's fun to see those guys doing well.
Now, originally from the Netherlands, and obviously, you know, when you were growing up, the competition wasn't what it was in North America. What's it like playing in games when you were dominating so much as a young kid?
Well, it was fun. You always want to dominate, and that's part of the game. If you're a good player, I think for any guy growing up, or even in NHL or the American League, when you're dominating, you know, that's the best part of the game. When you're a go-to guy and other teams are eyeing on you, it gives you a challenge every night, and it's an exciting time.
Now, you did get in some AHL games last year in the playoffs with the Penguins. What did that mean for your transition, getting that look and having a lot of success personally?
Yeah, for sure. When I was 18, all junior season ended, and went to Wilkes, you know, playing with Gensel and those guys. We had a good run. We lost Hershey in Game 7 that year, but a lot of experience. And, of course, the year after with shoulder surgery and stuff, I didn't have a chance to play in the American League back in juniors, going for a long playoff run with my team. And then, fortunately, they lost in round one against Providence. But this year, I think I'm just going to use that experience that I used in the past and use it this year.
Now, you have gotten in some games with Pittsburgh this season. You also got into 18 games right after the draft with Pittsburgh. How different were those two stints in your mind?
Well, I think the when I was 18, you know, my minutes weren't really high. You know, they're fourth-line minutes, just adjusting, seeing what the lifestyle's like and what the league's like. And I think this year, you know, playing a lot of minutes, playing on the first line with Sid, some games, you know, those are pretty cool experiences. And I think I was more ready this year, and I understood the game a lot better, and I thought I did a lot better personally when I was up.
And speaking of Sidney Crosby, obviously, you know, one of the best hockey players on the planet, everybody loves watching him, but playing with him, what is it about his game that is so effective? Why is he Sidney Crosby?
There's only one Sidney Crosby, and every night that I got a chance to play with him or watch him play when I was on the bench, it was unbelievable. The way he makes plays and the way he sees the game and how he studies the game is unbelievable, but he's so strong, so big. And you don't really get the puck off him. It's unbelievable when he's down low. You just got to try to find the quiet ice, especially the playmaking ability he has. I'm a shooter, so I just have to find the quiet area. And, you know, it's right on your tape, and you have space because everyone's just watching him.
Right on. I'm also curious about the AHL lifestyle, especially for a young guy like yourself, coming out of junior where, you know, you have billet families, you have high school. Now you have to really manage your time, I would imagine, a lot better. What's that like for you? Like, what do you do in your downtime, and how are you at, say, you know, cooking for yourself and things like that?
Yeah, you know, I was lucky to have unbelievable billets in juniors for 4 years, and they taught me a lot how to cook and how to do laundry and all that. So living on my own in Wilkes-Barre, and we live in apartments with a lot of guys around us, so we're always together. But I like cooking. I like going to the grocery store, waste your time a bit during the day. But yeah, my billets really helped me out with how to cook things, and I think I'm getting pretty good at that.
Uh-huh. And finally, in terms of becoming a full-time NHLer, which is obviously the goal of any hockey player, what do you think you need to do to become that guy that can be counted on for 82 games in a season?
Well, I think I'm pretty close to ready, or not if ready, in my opinion. But I think there's still a couple of things ready that I got to fix in my game. I think I got to be a bit more consistent. I think I go on good runs, and then I drop for a couple of games, and I pick it back up. I think those games where I drop, I can drop off that big. I think not every game is going to be perfect, but I think my consistency has to be not a lot better, but a bit better. You know, when you go through that stretch of not producing or stuff like that, you still got to do other things right to be effective on the ice. And I think my two-way game is getting a lot better. Of course, offensively-wise, I think I'm having a good year, and I think I developed a lot on the other side of the game, and I think I'm getting rewarded that with the offensive numbers.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for doing this, Daniel.
Thank you.
Well, thanks to Daniel Sprong and to Ryan Kennedy for that interview. Moving right along here, boy, we are chock full of stuff today, aren't
Indeed.
We? Man, you are getting your money's worth.
That's right.
People, you really are. today, now we're going to talk about the 2018 draft spotlight player, who's Joel Farabee, a left winger with the NTDP in the United States. To me, Ryan, a guy who's very intriguing, very, very intriguing. Like, was one of only two players that was called up for the from the U17 team for the U18s last year, the World Championship. Scored a couple of goals in the championship game. Acquitted himself very, very well. He's a guy who I believe is about 5'10", 5'11", which is not... You can play in the NHL at 5'10", 5'11".
Totally.
You can't play in the NHL at 5'10", 5'11" if you're only 160 pounds.
Right.
So he's obviously got some serious filling out to do, but a really, like, a really slick prospect. A guy who's putting up lots of points playing against the competition in the USHL. I believe he's only behind...
Oliver Wahlstrom,
his line mate. In points, but he's putting up like 1.5, 1.6 points a game in competition against USHL. So obviously a guy who merits some pretty close scrutiny here.
Yeah, certainly. And with Joel Farabee, the scouting report is very smart, very competitive, great motor. He's a leader. And the knock is he is light. And, you know, that'll come with time. And, you know, right now you're looking at just those raw tools. And that top line he plays on, right now, Jack Hughes is the center. And Jack Hughes, as we've said before on the podcast, super high-end pick for next year in the draft, breaking all sorts of NTDP records.
Mm-hmm.
But Farabee and Wahlstrom play together as wingers. They were great. At the All-American Prospects game at the beginning of the season, they played online together. And, I mean, the chemistry is just fantastic. Like, these guys have high-end skill. You know, Wahlstrom... He's the higher scorer right now, and he's got a bit of a bigger frame than Farabee, so I think Wahlstrom probably goes first in the draft.
Okay.
But, you know, 61 points in 51 games for Farabee, and, you know, the big spotlight for him is going to come at the World Under-18s, which is coming up about, you know, I guess a couple of weeks, about a month from now.
Yeah.
This is what the NCDB season is all about
right. For
the Under-18s. This is what they build towards, and I think Farabee is going to be a big contributor there. I think that you're probably going to see him as, you know, in that sort of like 11 to 16 range in the draft.
Okay.
We got a lot of defensemen this year, so this could be one of those years where you see a big run on blue liners and that could push some forwards back a bit.
Right.
But in terms of forwards, I think Farabee is probably in like a secondary tier right now, where the first tier is Svechnikov, Brady Tkachuk, and Philip Zadina. And then after that, you get into the... Maybe Wahlstrom is, like, you know, nipping at their heels there, but you get into a bigger tier with guys like Barrett Hayton and Joe Valeno, and I think Farabee is in that mix as well. So could be somewhere in the 11 to 16 range.
Right, and I mean, you know, I mean, he's certainly... I don't think anybody has any illusions that he's going to step into the NHL next year or even in the next couple of years, but obviously committed to a very good college program where he's going to develop highly, you know, develop really well at Boston University.
Yeah, he's committed to the Terriers, and I think this will be a good landing spot for him for a couple of reasons. First of all, you know, we talked about him having a bit of a slighter frame. When you go to college, you have so much time to be in that weight room because the schedule is a bit lighter than it is in major junior. So, you know, when you go to a top-end program like BU, you can just you get the right kind of pounds on your frame. You get the great strength and conditioning coaches, and, you know, you got that weight room. So I think for Farabee, to spend a couple of years at least at BU, you can get up that weight and really get the right kind of frame going. Also, when I look at the Terriers roster right now, obviously, you know, under Coach David Quinn, they've been great recruiters. And, you know, like on the defense this year, for example, they had NHL draft picks that were scratches on some nights because they had so many defensemen. Yeah. It wasn't that they were doing anything wrong. But in terms of forwards, you know, because you get guys leaving early, like Clayton Keller, for example, you know, it's pretty fluid up front. And when I look at BU, they've got a couple of seniors that are obviously going to graduate. Then you have players like Jordan Greenway, the Minnesota pick, who I would expect him to turn pro this summer. Bobo Carpenter, who's Bobby Carpenter's kid. He's a junior, but there's talk that he might, you know, leave, be a college free agent. And then Brady Tkachuk. Now, here's an interesting one. I was talking to a scout about him not too long ago, and he was pointing out that with Brady Tkachuk, if he doesn't go straight to the NHL, that's okay. You know, it's a lot to expect. Matthew Tkachuk did it.
Right.
maybe Brady needs a little more time. However, because he's being drafted out of the NCAA and not college, he could go to the AHL next year.
Exactly.
And that's what this guy was thinking.
You're right. And I mean, that was the question with Matthew Tkachuk as well. You know, we didn't know if he was going to make Calgary going into his first training camp, but there was that option of sending him to the American Hockey League. And so, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. You know, Brady Tkachuk's like my favorite player. Right?
I know. Yeah. Juniors, right? Yeah, exactly. So my point being there, Joel Farabee, I think there will be a very good slot for him coming in. Obviously, he has earned the time, but because of the turnover at BU, I think he's going to have a chance to be an impact player right away.
Okay, I've got visions of Calgary. That obviously they're in a complete free fall right now.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I have these visions of Calgary being terrible enough to get Brady Tkachuk to be in a position to draft Brady Tkachuk.
Double Tkachuk.
And then 4 years from now, nobody will want to play Calgary.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody will. It'll be the worst experience of your life.
Yeah, totally.
Playing against those two guys.
I can definitely see that.
All right. Moving along to the last segment of our podcast, we've got the team spotlight on the Columbus Blue Jackets, who, we could charitably say have been a confusing team at the draft over the years.
Sure.
Wow. Snake bit, whatever you want to say. I mean, they've had a rough run at the draft, but things appear to be turning around.
Yeah.
In Columbus, and they've obviously, you know, drafted some, you know, I mean, Zach Werenski, who's playing at the NHL level and playing very, very well.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got a pretty decent decent prospect list going. Very Europe heavy, which is strange because I would have thought they might have shied away from Europe after all the sort of problems they've had with like Russian players in here. Yeah, but very, very Eurocentric this list. What do you make of the Blue Jackets and where they're headed?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest positive for them this year is that Pierre-Luc Dubois is really coming along as an NHL center in his rookie campaign. Obviously, a lot of controversy about that pick. But, you know, Jesse Puljujärvi is still finding his way. So, maybe they had something there. You know, when I look at Columbus right now, they're in a bit of a transition spot where I think the guys that are going to be NHLers right now, they're already up there. And then the only player that I'm really keeping an eye on in the AHL right now is Gabriel Karlsson.
Mm-hmm.
And he has spent a little bit of time with the Blue Jackets, but right now he's with the Cleveland Monsters. He's a big dude. I think he's pretty smart. I don't see a lot of offensive upside, and I guess that's fine because you have Seth Jones and Zach Werenski. But with Karlsson, it's all about the reach and the defensive play, so I think he can be a very good complementary player for them. Now, as you said, a lot of players in Europe, and I'll start with a couple of Russian players. Daniil Tarasov, he was very interesting because he missed all of his draft year with a growth on his shin. He had to have surgery on it, so he's a bit of an unknown quantity. But Columbus, and I would say there's about 7 or 8 teams that were really in on him, they were keeping an eye on him because his father was actually Sergei Bobrovsky's idol back in Russia. His father was a goalie and is now a goaltending coach. And Sergei Bobrovsky was a huge fan of his.
Any relation to the famous Tarasov?
I think it's different Tarasov, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
But yeah, so this is Vadim Tarasov, his dad. And so Ian Clark, Columbus's goalie coach, he actually went over to check out Daniil Tarasov in his draft year. And so Columbus really did their homework there. And seems to have paid off so far because Daniil Tarasov, great size. And this year, .928 save percentage. I think his goals against average was 1.85. So back on track now that he's healthy. That's looking like a really great value pick for them.
Mm.
Another guy that they thought they were going to have maybe this season was Vladislav Gavrikov, the defenseman with St. Petersburg in the KHL. But he ended up not coming over, stayed with St. Petersburg. And if I'm not mistaken, he was at the Olympics. So, won a gold medal there.
Hmm.
So, they'll be keeping an eye on him. Obviously, you got to figure out the KHL contract status and things like that. But, obviously, a defenseman that Columbus is really looking at.
Interesting. There's a few guys on this list that intrigue me.
Mm-hmm.
And in our recent Future Watch edition, The number three and four guys on this list really intrigue me. Mm-hmm. Alexandre Tessier, who's from Grenoble.
That's right.
But playing in Finland. Mm-hmm. And the other guy to me is Vitaly Abramov, who's playing in Victoriaville of the Quebec League, who was traded again at the trade deadline. Abramov to me is interesting because all he does is score and put up big points. And he's a small guy. He's only 5'9". But the guy plays like he's 6'3".
Yeah.
You know, and he just crashes the net. He's fearless. He's like, does anything to get into and gets into those dirty areas. Doesn't care if he gets cross-checked in the back or, in his case, probably in the top of the head half the time. But, you know, a guy that I think could really be a real sleeper.
Yeah, and for me, he's the kind of player where you wish he could have gone AHL this year, but because he was drafted at a major junior, he had to stay in the Quebec League. And I think next year is going to be huge for him. You look at the Blue Jackets roster right now, and they've got a lot of forwards. So, you know, Abramov, he might have to start off in Cleveland. And I think that's okay, because that jump between junior and the AHL is so big.
Huge.
So if he can put up numbers in Cleveland, I think that's a great harbinger for him. And, I mean, you're right. He does so many things. I think he's the type of player that once John Tortorella saw him, he'd be like, I like this kid.
Yeah.
I want this kid. Yeah, I got to find a... Yeah,
he's me.
I got to find a spot for this kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And Tessier, this was a big year for him too, because, you know, playing in France, he was playing against men for the Wolfburners.
Nice.
The Grenoble...
great
name with a very bizarre backstory, which we don't have time for. But, you know, Columbus obviously wanted to see what he could do at a higher level. And going to Kalpa in the Liga, I mean, this was big for him. And he put out some decent points this year. So I think it was great because he's got some grit in his game. You know, obviously he can score, but getting that competition, I think, was big. And this is not the type of player that Columbus fans should expect to see next year or the year after that.
Right.
But once he's fully formed, I think you could have something pretty nice there.
He coached by Sami Kapanen in Finland. So,
so
a guy who, you know, can obviously tell them what it takes to get there.
Exactly.
And a guy, I don't think Columbus had a first-round pick. Please correct me.
They did not. You are correct.
So he was their first pick last year.
He was their first selection.
They kind of went off the board on that one. And, you know, if it works out, good on them. You know, I mean, the only guy there's a few guys we haven't touched on. Not big on the junior guys, Columbus. They got Abramov from the Quebec League, but really nobody of note from the OHL or the WHL. But they do have a guy playing junior A and in the BCHL, Cale Haworth, and two guys in the NCAA. What can you tell us about those guys?
Yeah, well, Cale Haworth, just a tower of a kid. And really nice year for the Trail Smoke Eaters. It was named to the BCHL All-Star Team, and he's committed to UConn. This is a player where, you know, pretty raw. If I'm not mistaken, he's a 97 birthday. I think he was passed over before. But, you know, Connecticut, they're building a pretty nice program there, and Maxim Latunov just left for the San Jose Sharks organization. So, again, you know, another spot opening up. And, you know, if Cale Haworth can develop and if he can be a strong, powerful guy, because he's got such a big frame, he'll be an interesting one to watch. And then going over to the college ranks, you know, we talked about Notre Dame and how good they are. Andrew Peak, one of Columbus's better prospects, he's on the defense corps there, played for Team USA at the World Juniors. I see him, you know, he's probably more of a defensive defenseman at the NHL level if he gets there. You know, he's got some okay offense at the college level, but, you know, he's got some good size and, you know, he does a lot of little things well. So I think Andrew Peak is the type of guy who, you know, at worst, he's like on your third pair. He's probably like going to top out. You know, if you're lucky, he's maybe your number four. You pair him with a guy who can really move the puck up the ice. Like a Zach Werenski, for example. But I think he's pretty solid for me. And then another player to keep an eye on, more so next year, is Peter Tomey, goaltender for North Dakota. He was the backup to Cam Johnson this year, but Cam Johnson is a senior, so that opens things up. Tomey will get more starts. He's got some pretty decent size. Played in the USHL, played in the NAHL before that. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do.
Well, it they do have an interesting list. It's got a lot of sort of variation to it.
Definitely.
And in our Future Watch edition, which I believe is still on newsstands, isn't it, Ryan?
Yeah, it pretty much just came out.
Yeah, go out and get it because it's awesome.
Yeah.
I just gotta give a shout out to the 10th prospect on Columbus, Elvis Merzlikins,
yeah.
Who I'm assuming is a Latvian,
yeah.
Who's playing in Lugano, a goalie in Lugano. And the description we have for him is a rock star persona with talent to match. Mm. Is Columbus ready for this guy? Well, they're not because they got a pretty good goalie right now.
Yeah.
But guy's name is Elvis and he's got a rock star persona. Like, what more could you want, right?
And final thought, because Latvian names always have an S on the end. Is his name actually Elvi?
It could be.
A thought to leave everybody with.
But if he's Elvis and he's got a rock star persona, I can't wait to see the guy. So,
there you go.
And speaking of guys we can't wait to see, we just talked about them for probably the last 40 minutes. And that'll do it for this week's podcast. I had a great time doing it. I think I'm going to be doing it for the next little while, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
So I hope you had fun. We enjoyed doing it. And we'll talk to you again next week.